right. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another Sports Injury Central Pro Football Doc podcast. But we're going to be basketball heavy today. Special guests in the football offseason. And we're thrilled to have Nick Wright on from Fox Sports, First Things First host and everywhere. Nick, welcome to the show and thank you.
Thank you. We've been trying to get this together for a while. I'm glad we're finally able to do it. I should tell the audience, Doc had no reason to do this other than he's a nice guy, but about a year and a half ago, my son suffered a sports-related injury. He's in his early 20s and got mixed advice from mixed doctors, and Doc was the tiebreaker. And it ended up working out perfectly. So thank you, and I'm glad to finally join you.
No, thank you so much. And been a big fan of yours, and thanks for following along on what we do. Obviously, we do injury stuff. Well, let's go a bunch of different places, but I think the first place to go is we're waking up to where I went to bed with Paul George stuff. Are you hearing anything on Paul George or anything?
I haven't heard anything other than what everyone saw since it happened. It didn't look good. I mean, you're obviously the expert in that, but it reminded me a bit of, if you remember 2 years ago in the playoffs, Kawhi landed oddly. It didn't look as bad as Paul George's did, and then he missed the rest of that playoffs and all of the following season, and even at the beginning of this year, was on a load management thing, which I know you brought me on. Like, I'm not supposed to ask you questions, but it was that was odd to me because it seemed like there was a long time where ACL recovery got shorter and shorter and shorter. And now in the last few years with Jamal Murray and Kawhi Leonard, seems like in the NBA, it's getting longer and longer. And obviously you hope that's not the case for Paul George. It would be a disaster for the Clippers. It'd be sad for Paul's dealt with a lot of injuries over the latter half of his career. But it looked really bad just from an untrained eye for me.
Well, first of all, Nick, I'm not a professional media guy. You are. And I'd love for you to ask questions in the breakfast part of the podcast. All right. We're all casual here. But, who I would compare it to, and we'll get to Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, when he took that awkward step in the playoffs, we were the only ones. I was the only one saying, gosh, I'm worried for an ACL tear there, you know, and that's what it turned out. And we'll talk about ACL recovery next and prolongation and probably in a load management discussion, right? That's probably a huge topic that we should cover. But what Paul George's injury reminds me of, and I hope the outcome is the same, but I'm worried it's not, is actually Giannis.
Giannis, when it looked like he was done for months
in the playoffs,
and he missed
right?
two
when
games.
He hyperextended his knee. Now, there I was wrong, Nick, because I didn't realize he had done a similar injury like that before. So one of the things is that we do with our staff is, look, I'm not sitting watching every NBA game. We watch every NFL game from our war room and the whole deal. But people tweet at me video and our staff gets on it and we do research. And it's important to me, the history. And the difference with Giannis is he had done something like that before. So he had residual laxity in his knee. And besides him being a superstar and tough and playing through injury, he came back quickly in those playoffs, quicker than I would have thought. I don't think Paul George is coming back anytime soon. And quite honestly, I think he's more likely season done at this point in time, given the hyperextension and more. By video, and Nick, it's just by video. I have no sources. I do know some medical staff on the Clippers, but I would never call them, right? And they would never tell me. That would be HIPAA. But by video only, there's worry for ligament damage, including an injury to the PCL and bone bruise. And yes, obviously he got, gingerly walked off, carted to his car, crutches. This is at least multi-weeks. Look, if you told me right now Paul George is back at some point during the playoffs if his team can advance, I'd say take it. I think this is a significant knee injury. I hope that it's the kind that he can avoid surgery. And obviously, if he had surgery, that would be putting next year in question. But this is significant in terms of your title pie, right?
I mean, right. So that's what I was going to say. Like the Clippers are, you know, the West is insane right now in that the Clippers are the 5 seed. They have 35 losses. The Pelicans are the 12 seed. They have 37 losses. So are the Clippers going to fall out of the playoffs entirely? No, I wouldn't think so. But they lose last night by 1 point. Kawhi can't get a shot off at the very end. And now is it truly in jeopardy that they fall to the play-in, which are do-or-die games? Absolutely it is. And in which case, if it's like, we got good news on Paul George, he's available in 4 to 6 weeks. Because of the absence, it is, I would say, more likely than not that they are not playing in 4 to 6 weeks. Like that is, this is, they don't have a margin for error standings-wise. And that team with Kawhi and Paul George has played great over the last 6-8 weeks of the year. But with one of them out, I don't believe they have the depth to be able to go on any type of real playoff run. And they're in a really weird spot because even staying at the 5 line might not be attractive to them if Paul George is going to have to miss, say, round one, because the 5 line means you play Phoenix in round one, where Durant should be back, and that's a really tough matchup. So this is a snake-bitten franchise, unfortunately, and last night seems to be more in line with that.
Okay, so let's talk about the NBA in general. There's no question there's all sorts of things to talk about. LeBron, if he can make it back, Lakers, what we think is plantar fascia. But let's talk about the bigger subject, load management.
Yeah,
I mean, the NBA is taking a lot of grief for load management. And I have my own opinions. We can get to some of that, but I want to hear yours. But even with load management, the top stars in the league have been injured all season. I mean, LeBron's out now. Kevin Durant's out now. Kyrie Irving's out. Luka Doncic is out. Now Paul George. And there's the list goes on and on. Giannis has been in and out at different points in time. Pretty much every star in the league is either out now or has missed time this season, and that's with load management. Steph Curry is back now, but he's missed.
It's really, really just Embiid and Jokic are the only two, and Embiid obviously was a huge injury risk. But if you were to talk about the top 10 players in the league, all of them have missed significant time. Anthony Davis, obviously. So here's my this is the analogy I always use, and you can tell me if, from a medical perspective, is if this is as dumb as it sounds or if I'm on to something, okay? So I went to college in Syracuse, New York, where the weather is just horrific. And about my second year there, I decided I'm not putting on my heavy, heavy winter coat until it drops beneath 35 degrees. I'm going to try to brave it out. That way, when it gets unbearably cold, I can act like I'm going to toughen, you know, thicken my blood, as they say, whatever it is. That way, if I'm wearing my heaviest coat when it's 40, then when it's 20, I have no extra thing to do and I'm miserable. Now, maybe that's dumb and maybe but at least psychologically it helped me. Okay. So here's why I bring that up in load management. We have seen in baseball and in basketball that teams have gotten over the last 10 to 15 years exponentially more cautious with injuries, way more cautious with load management. Didn't even exist 15 years ago. And I don't have the exact data, but just from watching the league my whole life, it not only does it not seem like it has cut down on injuries, seems like guys are dealing with stuff as much now as ever, if not maybe a little more. So the question that I would have is there something to, if you play through a little discomfort or a little pain, not, you know what I mean, through the Kevin Durant thing from 5 years ago where his Achilles was hanging by a thread, that you then have the ability to sustain, you know, what in a way that you don't if every time you're dinged, the team says take 4 days, take 5 days. Because it seems it's unfathomable to me that guys of not, and I'm not talking about 40 years ago, got 10 years ago, everybody played 72 or more games. And now would everyone play 82 like they did in the 80s and 90s? No, but guys would play, you know, you look at LeBron's game log, and LeBron might be an outlier, but hell, anybody that didn't have a long injury history, they were playing 74, 75, 76 games a year. They'd have a few games off, you know, assuming they were healthy. Now nobody does. And it seems to have led to more injuries. So is there something to kind of building up a body's ability to deal with it? Or is what they're doing right now smart and they've just been unlucky?
Well, you make a good point. But, you know, your story about the jacket reminds me, I had a kid in college in Boston. You were in Kansas City, so it was still cold. I've been in Kansas City. It's cold there. I've been to some cold games in Kansas City. But coming from Southern California, I had a friend who his entire college career in Boston wore shorts. And he said it was tough enough. It actually paid off for him because he ended up being a championship long distance rough water swimmer. And he got used to
the cold. Wow.
That's another story. That's an acclimation thing. But I think it depends on the individual circumstances. I hate it when people paint a broad brush. Look, should people do unpadded practices in football later in the season? It depends. You have a young team, an old team. Is it a veteran? I mean, it depends. So I think there are times where your theory could play a role. But I think there's also the theory that these guys, these athletes nowadays, they're bigger, stronger, faster, jump higher. But guess what? Their ACL and their Achilles tendon is not any bigger than yours or mine, right? And okay. So it's like an Indy car or off-road racing, whatever you want to call it, revving engines high with the same suspension on the cars that you and I drive, right?
Okay.
And so they break down more. And also I think some of it is it's the health and safety era. Before it was, oh, you got ding, play through, right? I mean, we've seen it in a lot of other sports. Look, load management is here, yet it's not doing enough. So some people might say, get rid of load management. And some might say, you need more because they're still getting injured because it's the high motor rev, et cetera. The only thing I would say in defense of the NBA, besides in all sports and all leagues, bigger, stronger, faster, the NBA isn't the only league that does load management, and they just get singled out for it. And I get it. Little Johnny goes to a game and the star player doesn't play. I get why they get dinged for it. But I always have this theory. You don't have to be faster than the bear, just faster than the guy next to you. You just can't be the slowest runner in the room. For concussions, the NFL was the slowest runner in the room. They got hammered for it. For steroids, baseball. I mean, steroids happened in other leagues too, but baseball got hammered. They were the slowest runner. Load management, NBA is the target here. Look, in baseball, we know there's load management. Now people have 5- and 6-man rotation. When I was growing up, it was a 4-man rotation, and your closer went the 8th and 9th inning, and sometimes the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. Yep. And now it's just a 9th inning, just an 8th inning, just a 7th inning guy. Baseball has it all the time in platooning long season. Football has it too.
I also think the NBA has made a decision, a conscious decision, that there's pros and cons to, which is more than any other sport, it markets its stars. And if you're going to be a sport that is more about the individual player than the team as a whole, then it is way worse for you if that individual player is not out there. And so, like, I don't, you said that little Johnny going to the game, and I know that's what everyone goes to, but that's a real thing. So, like, I'm a Nets season ticket holder, and I feel sick when we go to a game against a team that everyone's there to see, you know what I mean, the star on the other team, and that guy's not playing, and there's really no way to anticipate it. I have said for a long time that I think that the NBA should, edict is too strong, but put a very strong incentive for teams that if they have to load manage star players, do it at home games. Do it. You have 41 home games, and that way there is – now it'll still happen where this is my one time going to a home game for my team. I get that. But it's – you know, the Jaws wasn't hurt. Jaws was dealing with something else, but I'll use a different example. Steph Curry will, if you play in the Eastern Conference, Steph comes to your city once a year and you have one opportunity to see him, and you're not going to play him in the playoffs. And so I do think there's that. I know people have said cut the season down. My concern with that is I think guys would just load me. I think that unless there are, like, if it's a 72-game season and guys right now are missing 10 games and playing 72, I think they'll still miss 10 games and play 62. And it has to be – everybody brings up the, oh, well – guys, you know, because Jordan and the Bulls and those teams, they didn't load manage. They were fine. But they were able to get away with that to a degree, because no one was doing it. As soon as one team does it, if it does increase postseason performance, then every team is incentivized to follow suit. So the Spurs are really, you know, the patient zero of this. The Spurs started this 10, 12 years ago. And then if you're competing with the Spurs, you're going to have to beat them in the playoffs. You then want your guys to be as fresh, and then it becomes cyclical.
No question. And, you know, it's a copycat world and league, and the Bulls aren't doing it back in their heyday. And by the way, I helped out with the Bulls a little bit back in the day. My mentor at the time, John Heffernan, was the Bulls team doctor featured on Last Dance, et cetera.
Oh, yeah.
And he's part of our Sports Injury Central staff. And let me tell you, he would say, look, the reason why Bill Belichick and Tom Brady worked is if Bill could dress down Tom Brady and he took it, the other players better fall in line. Sure. For the Bulls, if Michael Jordan never took a day off, and then he would personally give you grief for taking a day off, nobody's taking a day off, right? It comes from the leadership from within there. And Michael was a different breed, right? Just like Tom and the whole deal. So there's no question about that. And you make an interesting point about playing at home, but perhaps if the NBA took a little more of an edict of what the NFL does. Now, the NFL is different, right? Each game is worth five NBA games. So if you sit the second quarter, that is load management. But I don't know if there's a way to say Steph Curry, you brought up his name, instead of playing one game at the whole game and then sitting the next, maybe playing half of one game and half of the next. I don't know.
So here's the problem for that. And this is where – so a lot of the load management stuff comes from the team down. Players want to play and the team's cautious. But what you're talking about, there would be massive player resistance because of your numbers. So if you don't play in a game, it doesn't hurt your stats. It's not like you get zeros across the board. You get N/As. Mm. So if you're like, okay, you've got 40 minutes of basketball to play on Wednesday and Thursday – play 20 in each game, star players are going to push back against that massively because it's like, no, then I'm going to have 15 points in one game, 13 in the other. No, I'd rather play one game, get 28 and keep my numbers up. Mm-hmm. And so that's like that's a real, and I've heard, I think it was Jalen Rose years ago, I'm not sure, somebody suggested that if a player is a healthy scratch, load management, that they should count in the stat sheet as 1 minute 0000, and then guys wouldn't want to do it. You know what I mean? Then guys would say, well, no, I'm not doing that. So it's tricky. It's really tricky in the NBA because I've thought something similar about can you give me 10 minutes? You know what I mean? Even if you can't, forget just sitting the second quarter. Can you give me 8 minutes in the fourth quarter rather than 0 minutes? But I've also heard LeBron say, and LeBron is, again, a special breed, but I've heard LeBron say, it is not for me about how many minutes I play. It's about, am I playing or am I not? Because the process of getting myself ready, my body ready, going through all of that throughout the day is really where the wear and tear is, more than if I'm playing 38 minutes or 28 minutes. And so I think there might be some pushback in that regard as well.
No, I get it. And I think it's a complex issue that the NBA is going to have to tackle. And really, the main thing is, you know, like as we talked about, it seems like all the stars basically have been injured. The one main star, well, one of the two is Embiid, and he's the one who's been chronically injured.
Right? Yeah.
And there's the irony in all of that. All right, Nick, thank you so much. We could probably go on for a whole hour here. I know your time is limited, and I got to take the kids to school here.
Well, we'll do it again.
I'd love to do it again. And, you know, enjoy chatting with you and your takes. One final question for you.
Sure.
How is it a kid who you grew up in Kansas City?
Yeah.
Okay. My son is a huge Chiefs fan, Patrick Mahomes. He's 10, you know, the whole deal. How is it that you grew up in Kansas City where there was no NBA basketball and the Chiefs are there and you're like a bigger NBA guy? You do NFL too, but
it's interesting. On our show, we do probably 60% NFL, 35% NBA, and then 5% everything else. You know what I mean? All college sports, baseball, everything is in that other 5%. But basketball was the sport I played. Basketball was the sport growing up that I truly loved. The Chiefs just broke my heart as a kid, and, you know, really good teams in the 90s and then playoff failure. Basketball was, when I was your son's age, I was convinced I was going to be in the NBA. And then once I realized I was not, which luckily I realized that probably around 12, 13 years old, I just kind of turned my attention to learning as much about it as I could, watching and wanting to broadcast it. And so basketball's massive in Kansas City, but it's college basketball that's huge, because of the Kansas Jayhawks. I think it's the best athletes in the world. And now I kind of get the best of both worlds, because I do love the NFL and the most talented player ever plays for my team. And so I get, you know what I mean? I joke with people that on the TV show, we do the NFL from August through February. We do the NBA from March through the end of June, and then we take some vacation in July, and then we start the whole thing over again.
All right, final question. Humor me here. Yeah. Off of sports, I've been to Kansas City a bunch, right? We played the Chiefs, yeah. So I was with the Chargers, yeah. The whole deal. And Kansas City is in, Missouri, right? Kansas City is basically in Missouri. It's on the border of Kansas, so it's called Kansas City, Missouri. But there's also a Kansas City, Kansas, right? Yes. Across the river. And we've stayed there sometimes. And I've never got anyone from Kansas City to answer this question. So I'll ask you.
Okay.
Why is it the Kansas side is not called Missouri City?
Well, so here's why. there actually oddly is a Missouri City, Texas. But what people don't know is this. The state of Kansas was named after the city of Kansas City. So it's not the other way around. Kansas City was there first. And then the state of Kansas, that's where it got its name from. And then in Kansas City, Kansas is kind of a tougher area. Not only when people say Kansas City, they mean the Missouri side, but it is the state of Kansas that's, because my dad was a Kansas City, Missouri firefighter. So I had to live in the city. I lived in the city limits of Kansas City my whole life before I, you know, moved off for college. I'm not a Kansan. I had nothing to do with the Kansas folks. I'm a Missourian that lives in Kansas.
Nick Wright. I mean, I've asked hundreds of people that.
Yeah, nobody knows. Kansas. Everybody thinks they're like, oh, it's silly. No, it's the state of Kansas was trying to glide off the reputation of my great hometown, Kansas City, Missouri.
All right. I got other these silly questions. I won't ask you what a Hoosier is, but that's a whole
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know.
All right. Thank you, Nick. And we'll take a break and we'll be back with the rest of the podcast. Great guest. Worth the wait this week. I appreciate you and love to have you back anytime, and happy to return any favors.
Absolutely. Thank you. Talk to you later, Doc.
All right, welcome back to the Sports Injury Central Pro Football Doc podcast here. We could have talked to Nick Wright for quite a while there, but timing, and we have the boys here. Jacob's here, Justin's in the background, and we have Mr. Statue of Liberty Taylor here. Is that like a pre-programmed background you have there, or is it a special order Statue of Liberty or something? What are those horns?
I move like this. I see. You see that? You see the little light right there? So I got to not move like a Statue of Liberty. Yeah.
You have a torch in your hand or something?
Something like that. Oh, I can't do it right. Yeah, there you go.
All right. Lots to talk about. March Madness. More NBA, NFL. I'll let Jacob lead the show here. Where are we going to go?
Go with the Syracuse connection and Nick Wright. Sean Tucker's making headlines right now with the NFL. Reportedly wasn't cleared for the combine, did his own combine and posted that, although not sure how seriously scouts take that.
Well, let me give you my impression on that. First of all, kudos to the combines, kudos to the NFL, kudos to NFL teams. I'm glad there was no leak of his medical. It used to be there was always a leak of medical. It used to be there was a leak of Wonderlic scores. I'm glad the league has clamped down upon that. There's no reason to publish anyone's Wonderlic scores. The team knows what it is or isn't. It has a chance to test out players, quarterbacks, et cetera. And there's no reason to shame anybody. There's no reason to ruin a guy's career. As long as the teams get the data, they know. And there's no reason to leak that stuff. And some of you may say, well, Doc, you quote leak stuff. No, we opine on publicly available information. In Miami, I met Tua after his hip thing and talked to his parents briefly as a hello. I saw him leave Radio Row Convention Center and limp. I'll admit I videoed it, but I was like, I'm not showing this to the world. It's unfair, right? That's like spying on somebody. And besides, I believe he ultimately would be fine, which he was. So we analyze things, but you know, the Jalen Smith thing we talked about is because he put it out on his social media that he was fine. So it makes it fair game. But that's number one. I'm glad that whatever Sean Tucker has, that it has remained quiet. Statistically, it's likely cardiac in nature. I don't know, no idea. Typically every year, there's usually two, no more than five players that get excluded at combines and aren't allowed to work out because there's some sort of heart issue discovered. That doesn't mean that they're forever ruled out. They're just saying for tomorrow or the next day, there's a question mark. And if there is a 0.001% chance of sudden death or some sort of cardiac event, it's right to rule them out till you get it worked out. I guess it's disappointing for players and the whole deal. But we've had lots of examples. Maurice Hurst, mm-hmm. I don't remember what Raider year that was. Where is he now, by the way, Hurst?
He shifted around. He was on the Niners a couple of years ago. Let me see exactly where he is.
My point is, I remember there was a scout that whispered to some media person that it was irresponsible for a team to draft Maurice Hurst from a medical perspective, like you're putting his life in jeopardy.
Cleveland Brown.
Is he a good draft pick? That's a different story. But certainly he's been, I don't know, a handful of years in the league now. Was he a good draft pick or not? Depends on, you know, his play and talent. But it certainly wasn't a travesty to his health to be drafted and play in the NFL. And so a lot of these things can get cleared. I hope Sean Tucker gets cleared. But you're right. No one cares about a social media workout. Look, he's going to undoubtedly go to recheck combines, which happens a little before the draft. Back in Indy. Hopefully he's cleared by then. I'm a little worried that his agent, or they haven't said that he is already cleared and the combine rechecks will prove it. Hopefully it's just taking time. Look, doctors don't trust a private physician's medical report. They want to see the MRI, examine the player themselves. a scout is not going to trust someone else's stopwatch time. Yeah. And this is how obsessed they are. For example, the people who watched on a video saw me do this. You know, when I've used a stopwatch, it's always this, right? How do you use a stopwatch? This or this?
With the thumb, yeah.
Yeah, thumb.
No scout uses their thumb.
Really?
Thumb's too
the
slow.
The timing and the speed of your index finger is a millisecond more accurate than your thumb.
Wow.
Go watch them next time. They all use their index finger.
Makes sense.
How crazy they are. And in a good way, right? They're good in their craft. And I bring that up because people probably say, what is he doing? Is he taking an old school picture, you know, with a camera instead of the camera phone? No, that's how they do the stopwatches, with their index finger, not their thumb.
I also mentioned before the leukemia diagnosis, John Metchie had a little, we detailed the heart concern for John Metchie, but he was eventually cleared too and drafted. And through all the physical process, they found the leukemia and stuff. So
thankfully, the majority of the time, when you're ruled out at combine, you end up passing. Not every time, but the majority. So we'll see on Sean Tucker. To me, what was interesting is he posted this online, yet at basically the same time, Syracuse had their pro day.
Right.
Do you think Syracuse didn't want him to work out at their pro day? I mean, he's one of the star players, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't know how many Syracuse had at their pro day in terms of players or scouts, but I would have to think that if Sean Tucker had passed his physical, Syracuse would let him work out at their pro day. It seems like either they didn't or Tucker didn't want to be there. I don't know. It seems like they didn't, right? So that seems to be a lingering question is all. Hopefully he'll be fine. But I'm just saying no one's believing stopwatch times put up by somebody else. They want to see it with their own eyes. Maybe the kid can get cleared and do another in-person workout, special workout, drive to another school's pro day and participate. Let's see what happens. But right now there's big question marks.
Yeah, there was NFL scouts and a bunch of people at the Syracuse pro day. So it would have been good for him to be there. So there is obviously something going on for him not to be at the pro day.
No, I don't know. Maybe he's, you know, dropped out of school to train and he's training in Florida and it was too hard for him to fly back. I don't know. But to me, it's interesting that he wasn't there.
For sure.
Switching gears a little bit, but saw a report last week that someone met with Damar Hamlin and he intends to come back, as detailed early on that he would have a choice. So keeps being better and better news.
We were very early on. Look, we waited until he was out of the hospital and waited for the dust to settle, but it was always our opinion, and not just mine. I'm an orthopedist, and talking to Dr. Ezon and our other pro sports team docs that made me know more about cardiology. Look, I'm not a cardiologist, but look, if you're in-house counsel as an attorney for a firm, you may not be a tax attorney, you may not be a litigator, you may not be a contracts guy, but you're responsible for overseeing all those specialty attorneys. Right. And that's what I was responsible for as a head team physician. So I got involved in concussions and heart issues and other things from a medical supervisory standpoint, although it wasn't my direct opinion. It was my job to cultivate the different opinions and come to a reasonable conclusion for the team. And that's what I'm doing for John Q. Public here. And with Damar Hamlin, it was always the opinion of Sports Injury Central, based on this process, that he would have the option to return to play from a health perspective. Now, whether he chose to play is going to be up to him. And I'm not saying this in a negative way. Sometimes going through this is traumatic enough that you just don't want to. Sometimes maybe mom says, hey, just don't put me through that. And quite honestly, I think he has a lot of other opportunities too. So, you know, but the good news is he'll have a choice, has always been our belief. The NFLPA doctor, Tom Mayer, said it a couple of weeks ago emphatically that he's guaranteed to return to play, right, that he will be cleared of the whole deal. Maybe he knows more than I do. I haven't looked at any records and for DeMar Hamlin. I don't know. But from analysis from afar, I always felt that he could. And good to hear that he has the option, right? And I hope he makes the best decision for him.
All right, on to March Madness. Had our Sweet 16 injury guide. We've been detailing it from before the tournament. Marcus Sasser surprised some on offense, breaking out with 22 points. Still think the groin's a big deal, though, right, Doc?
Look, the six scores for some of these players are tricky, right? Because we were assigning one score. And look, there's the chance of re-aggravation. Clearly, Marcus Sasser did better than we had thought in the second round game. He scored 22 points, but he wasn't himself. He sat out at 3-point land and hit some threes. He's a great player. He didn't slash and drive as much, and he didn't play as much defense, right? Right. So if you look at his stat line, you know, he should have been in the 90s. If you look at his overall play, I don't think he was low as we put him at. We were more worried that groin injury was going to be a big deal. So we'll kind of raise his number a little bit here. He's got another week, but I still don't think he's 100%. But he certainly is a lot better here.
Yeah, they get a big matchup against Miami, who Norchad Omier came into the tournament with the right ankle sprain, and he outperformed himself a little bit with 17 boards in 26 minutes last game.
Well, I agree with that too. And I think that's our bad, my bad. I didn't watch enough college basketball. That guy, by size and strength, is a man among boys.
No one's getting boards except him out there, yeah.
I mean, he didn't have to be that mobile and sky that much, but just by blocking out and boxing out and being big and strong, I think he falls into a lot of rebounds.
Yeah, no one's moving him, ankle or not.
Right. Well, I hope Miami's going to be smart enough to protect him, right? But you want him moving and running off picks and screens and other things defensively.
I do have a question on that, Doc. He hasn't hit his point total since he's come back. I know we were leaning on maybe the rebounds being an issue. Is it now maybe the points instead? Maybe he's not able to use his athletic body and get to the spaces inside that he can score easily, or his spots?
Well, typically, for Sasser as a three-point shooter, you're posting up and your team around you is kicking out and creating your space.
Right.
There aren't that many people, maybe James Harden, Steph Curry's, that do step back threes and create their own space. Yeah, yeah. Usually the team creates your space. And that helps when you have an injury, right?
Yep.
If Norchad Omier, if he has to create his own space to get his shot off, I think that is what potentially translates to poorer point production. Whereas, you know, my son lost his championship 10-year-old basketball game. And I think one of the reasons that I think they didn't quite make it over them, they overperformed, they did great, is I don't think they boxed out as well. I mean, to me, when I played ball and was taught, like, doesn't matter. You don't need to high point the ball and the rebound. You just right. need to keep the other guy from getting it. We don't care. If you do a great job boxing out, the ball can hit the floor and it's still yours.
That's right? Coach's dream. It bounces twice and someone grabs it.
As long as if everyone's boxing out, the ball can hit the floor and you're okay,
yep.
right? I mean, but we digress. But Norchad Omier did a great job.
He did play 10 minutes less than he did in the first round. That's also because they were winning by a lot against Indiana. So hopefully he is well rested too, right? He played 36.
And his arrow is going to be up,
right?
Because yeah. it's his ankle. Sasser's up because I think we grading him a little bit too low. So
he can score, but his defense, he's a two-way player. His defense.
Right, but that groin isn't going away.
Right.
O'Meara
right.
is getting healthier.
Another key injury matchup I'm looking at, UCLA against Gonzaga. David Singleton, his ankle went parallel to the court. Not good. He still was limping around the bench. A lot of people are thinking that he's going to give it a go in the game. He after the game, just said
oh,
it
was
a simple ankle roll.
Yeah.
So what are we expecting from him against Gonzaga?
you got to understand, as much as sometimes colleges get grief, it's NIL and whatever. Here's the thing. How many people playing in this March Madness in the Sweet 16, how many of those players will become NBA players and be drafted?
1%?
2%, yeah.
Ooh, that's a lot.
I mean, even of the players that are left, yeah, not very right. many. Not
right.
Okay. Many, no. It's different in football. If you took any bowl game, okay, if you took just the college football playoffs, four teams, there's probably 24 players that are being drafted for the NFL.
Well, you're at 10% maybe in that four game. Yeah, that four playoffs.
And,
yeah.
In the top four, right?
Right.
And even non-top four, there are NFL prospects, and this is why some players sit out bowl games.
Right.
Et cetera. The NBA, the draft is 2 rounds. Yeah. And if you're a second rounder, it's kind of, for the most part, a throw-in. A late first rounder is almost a throw-in, right? It's the hardest league to make the next jump.
Mm-hmm.
And so this March Madness is their Super Bowl. So everyone's going to try and play through. And remember, there are no roster restrictions, right? In the NFL, you activate your 46 and whatever, and each spot is precious. We've seen it in college football. Blake Corum, he's dressed, he's fine. Oh, no, he's really not getting any carries. You can put 100 people on the sidelines in college. Basketball, there's no roster limitation. If he can do anything, you suit him up and see what happens, and right. can he play, right? So will Singleton play? I think he will. How well and what he does is a different story. Could he stand out at the three-point line and hit shots like he has been? He could. You know, if his season-long percentage is 33% from three, I don't know what it is. I'm making it up. Maybe right. he's at 25%. You know, it's small sample size, right? It's going to affect him a little bit. Is he going to be able to slash and drive? I don't know that he does that a lot anyways.
No.
Not really. Is he going to play defense? That's where the rubber is going to meet the road. I think he's going to end up with minutes restrictions because he can't play defense like he did before, even if he tries to play. But this is their Super Bowl, man. They're going to, everybody's going to try and play.
43% three-point shooter, Doc.
Oh, well.
So if he drops a 33,
he's very good. He's a very good three-point shooter.
43 is awesome.
Right? Yeah, he's a very good three-point shooter.
That's my bad. I should have thought he was in the 40s because the college line is so much closer.
Yeah, yes.
Right?
He's a 3 and D guy. He specifically is good at that, yeah.
Yeah, 3 and D. The 3s will be all right. The D, not so much, which will cost
him some minutes. His teammate, and also Adam Bona, what he's playing with the re-aggravation of the dislocation of his shoulder on the dunk. How do you see he's going to how affect?
It'll be the same. I mean, like, it'll be more one-armed, right? I mean, the two-handed dunk,
one arm, right?
Yeah, you're not going to do that anymore. but it's hard to put a brace or a strap on because it limits your motion so much for basketball. So, yeah, it's going to affect him. He's going to play, but he's going to be more one-armed. I mean, look, Gonzaga had the right scouting, and I don't know that any team really does medical analytics scouting. Do you want to take him off the dribble on that side? Because he's not going to be able to block your shot with his left arm.
Right.
and to cross over with your right arm, you don't get as much reach.
Right.
And so that's where he's going to be vulnerable there.
So Jaden Clark's already out already, right, with the Achilles. That's probably their three best defensive players, and this is probably the biggest matchup for them now, right, going deep into the thing. So it's probably – this is the game that might affect them the most, right, Doc, having all three of these guys affected.
Well, Gonzaga, you know
– led the country in scoring, 87.5 a game, so.
This is the matchup. This is the one to see how much these injuries have affected their defense.
Well,
right?
I mean, UCLA's done very well. They're right. Some people think they're one of the favorites, right? But they're just very talented. But will it finally catch up to them? That's the question here. And you're right. Three guys, but more importantly, three guys late season. No time to adjust.
All affecting the defense too, yeah.
And Clark is obviously out. The shoulder's going to play. You know, you saw what he did before. He's going to continue. And then obviously Singleton, defensively will be the bigger question mark than offensively.
Yeah, the last one, Brandon Miller from Alabama going against my Aztecs. Hopefully, I mean, we talked about him previously on an article that his length and frame make his groin not as big a concern because he can still be effective.
Yeah, less of a concern than Sasser, but obviously Sasser found a way around it too. But, you know, what do you think? Aztec's going to get it done?
If we can score more than 50, I don't know. We did against Furman, but Alabama's a different beast, so it'll be tough. Moving on to baseball, we got a season kicking off in, 8 days now, 9 days now, sneaking up on us. So obviously the big recent topic is Bryce Harper not going on the 60-day IL. Is that a surprising move? Is that expected?
I mean, Bryce Harper tore his ulnar collateral ligament in season, right?
Yeah.
Beginning
of the season, and he finished the season as a DH. So why is anyone surprised he's not going on the 60-day IL? Shohei Ohtani, who last night, World Baseball Classic, blah, blah, blah. That was kind of cool that he faced Mike Trout. I thought that was kind of cool.
That was very cool. It's just funny the people that they say, they're like, oh, if they were on the same team, they'd be winning because they don't win together on the Angels. So that's the joke, right? But yeah, that's what everything
we'll see if we can make another championship.
Facing each other, yeah.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is, what was I saying there? Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
Ohtani had an ulnar collateral ligament tear.
Yep.
People forget that. And surgery. And he returned pretty early as a DH, but didn't pitch for much longer. Bryce Harper, the reason he's not going on a 60-day IL is, A, he's Bryce Harper. And if you can get him back quicker, you need him. B, they can DH him again, right? I mean, look, last year, if there was no DH rule, new DH rule in the National League, maybe they would have to put him down. So it probably is a good thing that the baseball did that. You want Bryce Harper in there.
Right.
So I don't think he's going to be ready to go and throw guys out at home plate starting at the beginning of the season. That may not happen until fairly late in the season, if at all. DH, and could he do some spot roles in right field, maybe. And we had an offline discussion of how many high effort throws do you make from right field in a given game. Yeah. At most one, right? Mm-hmm. You got to toss the ball around, but high effort, throw a guy out at third base or home plate from right field at most once a game, right? So it doesn't surprise me. Bryce Harper will be able to hit.
And with the Astros, Altuve out the 2 months with the thumb break, the one I'm watching, we've been watching from last year, is Jordan Alvarez. They said he progressed to on the field hitting, and he's going to make his spring training debut on Thursday, I believe.
Well, look, Altuve first. It actually hit his left hand, it seemed like, then hit his right thumb.
Yeah,
right thumb is better than left thumb, and it looks like it's more a fracture at the tip. Yes, he had surgery. But I'm believing that 8 week, at most 10 week timeline. I think he will be back right on schedule.
The one thing I noticed about that injury, Doc, and I think it also agrees with us, is that their win total didn't drop at all. So this injury they're seeing too as well, it shouldn't affect them too deep into this season. And it's a long season.
Yeah, but he's still going to miss, 6 weeks of the season, right? Because he got injured with about 2 weeks of spring training left, roughly.
Right.
Alvarez, look, we're not trying to say doom and gloom, but what do we always say? We hate it when injuries from one season leak into the next. Well, this has done that for him now.
Yeah.
Now, it's not the season yet, but it's leaked into spring training. So we'll have to see what happens, but that is a big question mark.
I think that's a big issue because we've been doing drafts more and more because it's starting to come up, starting to understand the stats and stuff. And he's a top 5-7 pick every single draft, first round. So if people are doing that and he's not going to be 100%, that's a huge issue, especially like you're saying, it's lingering into the season from last.
You know me, I don't draft fantasy baseball stuff, but if I did,
I haven't gotten into baseball yet. Sorry,
I would hope he doesn't fall to my spot. You know, I hope I have another option.
Then we won't know if he's hurt or not, right? No one has the red thing next to their player, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I'm hoping the guy in front of me takes him. If I'm in a draft,
well, that'd just be superhuman. If I mean, even if he doesn't miss time, I don't know how you don't go through spring training at all, have a week, and then start the season hitting the way he's supposed to hit. So
his His first day was literally, it's been a whole spring training for this whole month, right? His first day was the other day, and they're already saying in the headline, opener is in doubt. So it's like I said, it's already leaking into the first day of the season. It seems like it's already going to be an issue. It's just, we haven't seen how much yet, right?
I think it was my guy, Dusty Baker, in the beginning when they talked about this. Oh, no big deal. It's nothing. Yep. It's just precautionary. Yep. Precautionary for basically all spring training now, right?
Yeah. Yes, so. Exactly.
We'll see. Kinda, well, if he does very well game one without spring training, maybe there's a new model, right? Who needs all the spring training? Just go.
Got a few Padres injuries to get to, and then we'll get to the beast of the week. Juan Soto with the mild oblique. Echoes in my head that the only mild oblique is to someone on the other team, right?
Yeah, there's no such thing for a
hitter. Yeah, I think no mild oblique.
Pitcher. I mean, the torque. Now, I think he's left oblique. Might be a little bit better than right, since he's a left-handed hitter. But still, it's an issue. It's something to be watchful. So mild in his favor, left side in his favor, but something to watch early season. But he should get better. He'll be okay. Tatis has done okay so far, I think.
Yes.
Which is good. And then Musgrove with the toe. I think he's right on track from what we said from the beginning. He lost his toenail, distal tip, kettlebell injury. We said from right when it happened, he's missing the start of the season. Mm-hmm. And I think that's becoming clear now.
That's fine, yeah.
But I think he's back in April. Yeah, in the month of April.
Starts.
But he's going to miss the start of the season. Once he gets going, he needs the ramp up time as a pitcher, but I'm optimistic he pitches in April, but certainly he's missing the opener and the initial rotations that he has.
And catcher Austin Nola got hit in the face the other day, gonna have no surgery, and they're saying the opener's a doubt for him, but any concerns over that?
Well, you know, when he does play, he's gonna need to wear a mask. Oh, wait, he does.
Anyway. There you go.
Look, it's scary to take a ball off the nose. And the nose is actually pretty easy to fracture. And even when it's broken, it's very rare to, quote, need surgery. And the surgery usually is to, quote, put the nose back into place. It's not plate and screws. He wears protection anyways. He can wear protection. Look, I know it affects your vision if you wear too much protection when you're at bat.
Right.
That's an adjustment. I don't see why he can't make the opener unless there's a lot of swelling and they can play Camposano and he's been getting the reps, right? And so it may be something where, okay, here's a guy with some swelling and he's got to have different face gear on and he's missed a week or more of reps where Camposano's ready to go. There's no reason to rush Nola, but I don't see this being long-term.
Camposano's better than him anyways, but it's okay. we'll wait and see that. No, they actually have a really good third string catcher too, Pedro Severino, who actually started for multiple years too. So they will be okay, I think. Just let Nola be 100% and let those two guys fill in till he's ready.
Going back to Bryce Harper, if Bryce Harper broke his nose, he'd be playing. It's Bryce Harper.
Beast of the week, I got the director of media relations for Fairleigh Dickinson, the 16 seed. Best in Purdue. He's a junior at the university. He's leading their media relations. That's
who does great he know stuff.
Do you know the story there? I mean, is there, like, first of all, is this a paid position? Is this like an internship slash class? Like, you know, he's taking media and he got the role. Is this like the school newspaper? You know,
I guarantee this is the most media attention Fairleigh Dickinson's ever gotten. So
that it's always a student that's the media director?
Right.
Have they always been just saving money there and never had one?
That's a pretty big job at most schools, right? That's a pretty top lot of work job, a lot of paperwork.
I think it is, but I mean, how many beat reporters cover Fairleigh Dickinson?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I mean, my guess is they've had more attention in this last week than they had the entire history of their school in terms
just
of
100 fold, for sure. Yeah.
Once they found out they're in the tournament, they better have been ramping up. Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean,
they didn't win the conference.
I mean, there's. You know me, I like to hear the backstory. You guys probably thought it silly that I asked Nick Wright about Kansas City, but I'm glad he had an answer. It's the first answer that ever made sense.
Oh, it's good.
Now you can take that answer to everyone you've been asking.
I've asked a lot of people, and everyone just looks at me like, what are you talking about? No one's ever had an answer, but that was a good answer. There was no state of Kansas. All right. Now, my follow-up, and I didn't want to go off the rails, is then if there was no state of Kansas, why was it called Kansas City?
Yeah, where did they come at? Where did they come up with that?
No answer for that.
Anyways, so our junior guy, we'll give him Beast of the Week. That's pretty good. His whole school, his team deserves Beast of the Week.
Definitely.
A huge upset there. So who you got? Who's going all the way? Where are the upsets?
I got Alabama.
Tough. Yeah.
I got to stick to my bracket. It's been doing well. Third place in our company league.
He picked Furman over SDSU, though, so don't trust him. He's fading us hard.
Want him to keep going. Yeah.
Alabama and Houston.
Alabama's a front runner school. I mean, it's popular to take them. I'd have to take them as well. But if we're a non front runner spot, I'd take Gonzaga.
That's a good, yeah.
Yeah, Gonzaga really give ass to UCLA. That's the big one coming up this week.
I like Texas. I like Texas as a non-front runner if we're going to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. March Madness starts again tomorrow. Thanks to Nick Wright for joining us. The time flew by on his segment. And Sports Injury Central, the Sick Insights. Follow Sick us picks. Or subscribe to the YouTube stuff and the podcast. And thanks for watching and listening.